The spring allergy season is upon us. That, along with lingering factors contributing to airborne pollution, it's time to buttress your respiratory health with Breathe Clear from my friends at NT Factor. Breathe Clear with NT Factor combines the benefits of NT Factor's breakthrough lipids formula with powerful bioflavonoids and amino acids. Together, they've been shown to restore energy, repair the damage to cells caused by air pollution, decrease allergic reactions, reduce sinus congestion, and open blood vessels. Breathe Clear with NT Factor is the best formulation available for tackling both allergies and the free radical damage caused by air pollution. For a limited time, buy one bottle of Breathe Clear with NT Factor and get another one absolutely free. That's a $27 savings. Just go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com, or call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158. Take advantage of this buy one, get one free sale, and arm yourself with the protective power of Breathe Clear with NT Factor this spring and breathe freely while supporting your body's fight against allergies and free radicals. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our subject today is heart disease prevention, and we actually have some brand new research to share with you from our friends at Kyolic. Joining us today is our good friend and colleague, Jim Lavelle, who's a clinical pharmacist, author, board-certified clinical nutritionist, and heart health expert. He is an outstanding communicator, works with clients, does corporate work, also works with a sports team as a performance optimizer. His discussion today with us will be about how heart disease starts sooner than you think. And so prevention should begin early, not just when we determine that people are at high risk. So without further ado, here's Jim Lavelle. Jim, it's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always great to be on your show.
Indeed, yeah. We always generate an interesting conversation, and I always learn something new, although this is an area that I'm pretty steeped in. You usually provide a novel perspective. So let's look at the issue at hand, which is whether we should begin cardiovascular prevention early. And I have to say, I don't know if you are a fan of one of my favorite podcasters who I listen to, and I sometimes disagree with him. One of my fundamental disagreements with him, first of all, let me say that I agree with him. He's Peter Attia. Are you familiar with Peter Attia? Do you listen to him?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
And he's all about prevention. But his version of prevention, first of all, he recognizes that cardiovascular disease begins many, many years before it emerges as a problem. So before people have an event, or even before people have significant amounts of plaque in their coronary arteries, which can be determined via imaging studies, the beginnings are early. And it's his contention that we could virtually eradicate cardiovascular disease by aggressive application of the drugs at hand. He personally takes three drugs. Even though he had kind of a minimal plaque score, he has a plaque score of 7, but he's a relatively young guy, so obviously he's concerned. He's hoping to live many more decades, and 7 can easily become 300 if you live to 80 or beyond. So he takes three cardiovascular drugs. He takes a statin, he takes bempedoic acid, he also takes what's called a PCSK9 drug. They're currently expensive.
Oh, wow.
And injectable. And he virtually obliterates his LDL cholesterol. I think he gets it down to like low double digits, like 20 or something.
Wow.
Like that. So that is,
wow.
I think we agree with the premise that prevention should begin early, but, perhaps we should tee off the discussion by looking at some alternate ways of prevention, short of pulling the trigger on some of these powerful drugs. Is that a fair way to frame this conversation?
I think that's a great way to frame it because, it's that old story of the truth lies somewhere in between, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you get down to where you really have almost no LDL cholesterol, and, you know, how are you going to build hormones, and how are you going to protect your double lipid rafts of your brain, right? Your cell membranes of your brain are very lipid rich, as are all your other tissues. And so, you know, not to mention testosterone, production if you're a male, you know, all of these things kind of are important on the fact that, you know, cholesterol is in our body for a reason. Mm-hmm. Just like bad cholesterol or damaged cholesterol is in our body for a reason. And it's more about us figuring out, well, what are we doing that's creating, you know, the damaged particles and the weakness of the endothelium and the glycocalyx that allows for the that lipid particle, that LDL cholesterol, to bore in there and then, you know, allow for the monocytes to turn to macrophages, and macrophages attack that cholesterol and create a foam mm-hmm. cell. And then we got a calcified cap. Right. And I think it really is important for people to understand that the earlier you start bad lifestyle habits, the earlier your risk of triggering heart disease occurs.
You know, and I believe it was actually during the Korean War, which was in the late 40s and 50s, early 50s, that it was determined based on autopsies of deceased, American soldiers, that in these young individuals, some as young as, 18, 20, 22, that they, even with the diet that was perhaps somewhat better then, we know that people are much more prone to obesity and metabolic syndrome these days, but even then, what they found is fatty streaks beginning, so-called fatty streaks, which is a precursor to the heavy layered gunk that coats arteries. So the suggestion is that with the American diet and lifestyle, it's never too early to begin prevention, I guess. That's the take-home lesson.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think when you look at, in general, I mean, if you look at what really one of the biggest things, if you look at kind of the bigger studies that have come out, interestingly on the, the effect of blood glucose on that glycocalyx or the inner lining of the artery. So when you hear the term glycocalyx, it's like the hairy-like projections, right? They're almost like if you see them microscopically, they literally are like this hairy projection off of your endothelial cell that acts as, protective mechanism. But when you get under really high stress, or you get under a situation where your lifestyle is, cookies and nachos, you start to thin that endothelium, the lining, the protective lining of the inside of the artery starts to get thinner and allows for, lipid particles, especially LDL cholesterol. And when you're under stress and you're eating poorly, those particles get way smaller, like BBs, and they can get in there and lodge themselves in that endothelium. And so it becomes really important to understand that, just like, prevention is best when we're proactive, and being proactive means, what are the things that I can do with my lifestyle that's going to help me to protect that inner lining of the artery and keep my lipids from turning into bad actor lipids, right? And I think we miss that. You've been around medicine long enough. It's the old story of you got good or bad cholesterol.
Exactly.
Or all cholesterol is bad.
Yeah.
Right? And there's no explanation of, cholesterol has value. It's why it's in your body. But what is it that we do that creates the damage? And we do have to remember 40% of heart attacks are in people with normal cholesterol and clean arteries.
Indeed. Yeah. So, unfortunately, when it comes to the practice of medicine, it all seems to boil down to LDL cholesterol. That's the bad guy. There are norms that are set up for LDL. We've been playing cholesterol limbo. How low can you go? Because at first, you know, it was thought 160 or above was satisfactory. Now they've lowered it to 130. But it depends if you have cardiovascular risk less than 100. If you've had an event, they want it less than 70 or even as low as 30. It's all about LDL, but maybe there's some more nuance to this story. Can you break it down for us a little bit?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the first thing is that, when people, because people will argue, well, you know, there's other countries where LDL cholesterol is high and they don't have the same effect. Well, that's because more than likely their diet in that culture is pro-inflammatory, or the things they're doing in their lifestyle isn't triggering inflammatory signaling. So when you get metabolic inflammation from, lack of movement, too much movement, too much food, too much stress, whatever the reason is, it sets off a chain of events. It starts to change the characteristics of your LDL cholesterol. It gets smaller. So they become, instead of like a softball that you couldn't throw through a tennis net, and the tennis net's that inner lining of the artery, they become BBs, which can get through the tennis net.
The so-called small, dense LDL as opposed to the large, fluffy LDL, right?
Exactly. So you're making really small LDL particles that can now penetrate. So that's one facet. And then the subfractions of the lipoprotein, so LDL cholesterol, has subfractions in it, other components to it. And you can have good components, good building blocks, or you could have bad. So you hear about things like apolipoprotein B or apolipoprotein A. A being the better one that's protective, B being the more active or bad guy subfraction of cholesterol that ends up damaging your lining of your arteries and promoting inflammation in your arteries. Because in the end, heart disease is an inflammatory process.
So it's actually said that ApoB as a marker, and we can get that measured, it's a standard test, maybe an even more precise marker than LDL or cholesterol to HDL ratio. ApoB really may be one of the key components of cardiovascular risk, in other words.
Exactly. And there's a couple other ones that are real important.
Yeah.
So there's another one called lipoprotein little a.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that when, and that goes up, especially if you've had, familial history of diabetes or your blood sugars are high, you make a lot of lipoprotein little A. And lipoprotein little A is another one of those bad actor lipid fractions that triggers inflammation at the inner lining of your artery. And then if that LDL cholesterol has penetrated the inner lining of the artery and it lodges in there, you get more production of something called LPPLA2, another marker that is showing you that when that's high, you're already starting to make those blood vessels get kind of damaged. And so you can measure that. It's an advanced lipid panel.
Mm-hmm.
And you can obviously measure things like oxidized LDL, or the way I explain that to people is LDL that's rusted, right? You think of a, nice shiny piece of metal. Well, that's the inner lining of your artery. Well, then when oxidized LDL occurs, it's rusting the cholesterol, making it more damaging and making it more virulent. And the other thing that happens with all of that is that while that's going on, the inflammation is leading to creating more stickiness to the inner lining of those arteries. So you get something called vascular adhesion molecule.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes sense, right? An adhesion molecule so that things stick to it. And so instead of having a situation where things are bouncing off the inner lining of your artery, the old I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever bounces off of me sticks to you, right? You want to be rubber. You don't want to be the glue.
Mm-hmm.
And because the glue, you catch things with the glue. And instead, you want that inner lining to be very, very, very resilient and able to kind of let things bounce off of it instead of damage it. Mm-hmm. And, it's interesting. I actually did a recorded talk yesterday for a couple hours on, cardiopulmonary neurovascular relationships. So, we all got smart watches now and it's telling us it's time to breathe. And turns out when we don't breathe deep, that's not too good for us, that we end up being in more sympathetic stress. So more adrenaline and more noradrenaline. Well, what does that do? That tightens our blood vessels. So now we have tighter blood vessels, stickier blood vessels, and the heart has to work harder to get that blood flow through those blood vessels. And now we have the combination of my arteries are getting damaged and my blood pressure's going up. And that's why heart disease is such a silent killer, because all these things are kind of happening slowly over time until at one point it erupts and you make another kind of plaque, not just hard calcified plaque, but something called vulnerable plaque, which is, for lack of a better term, soft and gooey, but it can break off and end up creating stroke risk. And we can measure that now too with imaging using something called a Cleerly scan. And what's really important to understand is that it's not just about LDL. It's about what kind of cholesterol are you making? Because people go, oh, HDLs are good. Well, only if the HDLs are big and fluffy.
Yep. If then you're not, you can actually slice and dice the HDLs.
They're not good for you.
Yeah. Because there's this paradoxical thing. We used to think that people with high HDLs had a get out of jail free card. But not necessarily. It depends, because there is sometimes HDL that's ineffective HDL. And in fact, there's been a multi-billion dollar project to develop drugs that raise HDL. Niacin raises HDL very nicely. But in the end, studies are kind of weak on the benefits of niacin. But also with these blockbuster new drugs, they kind of hit a dead end because they were making a lot of HDL, but it wasn't quality HDL of the right kind. Let's talk a little bit about triglycerides, because, it's kind of like the odd man out, and sometimes it's not really looked at that carefully. But I think it's ultra important in terms of predicting cardiovascular risk, right?
Oh, triglycerides are so important because it tells you, first of all, the higher they go, the more you're developing a fatty liver. And of course, the triglyceride to HDL ratio is actually something that's pretty important, where ideally, if you could be at a 1-to-1 ratio, say your triglycerides are, 85 and your HDLs are 80 and you're at about a 1-to-1 ratio of the two of those, that's pretty good. I mean, under 3 is good. Under 2, even better. Approaching 1, really good.
Golden, right?
Because when triglycerides are high, they're very atherogenic, right? You're creating a tremendous amount of inflammatory signaling. And how do we get high triglycerides? Well, we eat too many carbs and eat too many sweets. You don't get high triglycerides from eating fat. Typically, you're getting it because you're getting too much sugar and getting too many refined carbs in your diet, and you're not getting enough exercise in order to utilize those, those triglycerides that your body's making.
And finally, there's blood sugar and hemoglobin A1C. And I think it's underestimated the impact that elevated blood sugar, even within the normal range, but high normal, has on accelerating the risk for not just heart disease, but also stroke. So what about that?
Well, I mean, I'm a huge, proponent, and I like measuring insulin too, because I find a lot of people, they'll have maybe an 89 blood sugar, but their insulin is, it's fasting is say a 15, with the normal being from say, 3 to 19. But when you're making that much insulin is going to create more small particle LDL, it makes you generate more adrenaline and noradrenaline. So you're making more norepinephrine and more epinephrine, which are going to create kind of that stiff vessel effect.
Mm-hmm. And high blood pressure.
And so and high blood pressure, of course. And that's why all diabetics have heart disease, right?
Yeah.
There isn't a diabetic that does not have heart disease.
Exactly. That's the big concern.
Yeah, it is. And then they have peripheral vascular disease as well, because they're making more sticky endothelium. They're damaging the lining of the endothelium, and their small capillaries that are very fragile end up collapsing. And then you lose circulation into the periphery. So what happens with people with diabetes? They end up with more non-traumatic amputations. You know, they lose digits. They lose blood supply to their extremities. They lose blood supply to the eyes. They end up getting more oxidative damage. And so, yeah, I mean, and I'd say the other one is cortisol. So it's cortisol, it's mm-hmm. blood sugar, it's insulin, it's hemoglobin A1C, and then it's where are your lipids at? And, you know, if you could control that relationship, yeah, you're knocking out the number one killer, because heart disease is the number one killer.
Right. And that was very nice, because we tend to succumb to kind of a paint-by-numbers mentality. It's like, what's your HDL? Then if it's a certain level, no matter what your status of the rest of your health or some of these other markers are, you got to go on a statin. And that's, I actually spend, and I'm sure you do, spent a lot of time counseling patients, providing a second opinion on whether statins are necessary. And I'm not inalterably opposed to them. I just think that it doesn't make sense to use them when the risk is low, because the downside may be greater than the minimal benefits that they might provide. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. But what I wanted to do is, you know, we're talking about chiolic aged garlic extract formulas. Where do they enter in with some of these considerations that you just mentioned? Are they kind of a Swiss Army knife to address many of these concerns? Because I mean, I don't have cardiovascular disease. I've had, you know, imaging studies, and it fortunately shows no plaque. But I take it for prevention. Can you go a little mechanistically into how aged garlic extract impacts the heart? And then in part two, I want to talk a little bit about the brand new study, which is exciting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, so in studies, in humans, right, so not in animals, aged garlic plays, you know, the term pleiotropic. It has multiple ways that it helps people manage heart health. One thing we know is that it reduces oxidized LDL. So that rusted LDL that's really bad for laying down plaque, it lowered it in one study as much as 88%. The other thing that they showed in a study that was just released in the last year was that it reduces vulnerable plaque. So the sticky, soft plaque that's thought to be even the more dangerous plaque, it reduces that. It also works on that bad actor apolipoprotein B, that they've shown that it helps to do that. And then the next thing that it does, and they've once again shown this in multiple trials, is it helps the blood vessels to become more pliable again. So they're more flexible, like a new garden hose that will roll around a reel very easily. But as you lay that garden hose out and you run over it with your car and the sun's beating on it, then you go to roll it up and it gets stuck, right? You know, it's not bending the way it should. That's what happens to your arteries. It's literally the nice flexible nature of the arteries is restored. And there's also an improvement that they recently showed in wound healing, as well as for peripheral circulation, because you know, when you heal a wound, you need blood to get to it. And so if your circulation's bad, and that's why diabetics have diabetic ulcers, and it can take months to heal them in many cases,
so
because they have bad circulation.
Via the nitric oxide mechanism, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you get increased nitric oxide production, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. And then, of course, with the actives, the S-allylcysteine that is in a garlic extract, The cysteine is incredibly important because it turns out that cysteine helps, it's a nutrient for the glycocalyx.
Oh.
So you're feeding that glycocalyx for it to get healthier. Glycosaminoglycans, another component, so glucosamine, mm-hmm. also helps with feeding that endothelial lining. And so one of the really interesting areas that aged garlic helps is that it reduces bone loss. So you don't leach calcium into your bloodstream, because when you're leaching calcium in your bloodstream, there's a direct correlation mm-hmm. to bone loss and coronary artery calcification. So it stops.
Is that like a vitamin K like effect?
And they found that out serendipitously.
Is that a little like the vitamin
kinda
K?
Yeah, like almost like the K. It's kind of like a K2 effect.
Right.
But, you know, it's actually having the effect of stopping it dead in its tracks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it, it acts as an antioxidant, which is really good. And then it has these multiple effects on the type of lipids you're making, the flexibility of your arteries, the reduction in calcification that's going in, the modeling of the type of cholesterol you have. So you're starting to make more good cholesterol than bad. And then probably one of the other unsung heroes of it is that it raises a compound in your body called adiponectin.
Mm.
And adiponectin is, when it's low, your body has high oxidative stress. And when it's normal or good, your insulin receptors are working better, so you don't prone to become as insulin resistant.
Hmm.
And so adiponectin is a really important compound. And guess what? When you gain weight, your visceral fat starts making more of a compound called resistin, and resistin is one of those compounds that leads to that left ventricle enlargement that happens with diabetics. But when your resistin goes up, it turns off your adiponectin production.
Hmm.
And so that's another kind of interesting nuance when, you know, people are overweight. You know, I always tell people, I love people of all sizes. My brother was, you know, 476 pounds. And I loved them dearly. I didn't care whether he was 400 pounds or 150 pounds, right? But the reality was it led to his early demise, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that when you've got all that belly fat or visceral fat, you're making inflammatory compounds that push you directly to heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
You make more resistin, you make more angiotensinogen, so you go from angiotensin 1 to 2. And why that's important is angiotensin 2 is what triggers the smooth muscle, or basically the artery walls, to thicken up. And that's why we use one of the big medications you give a person with diabetes right away to protect their artery,
ACE inhibitors,
is you use either what's called ACEs or ARBs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and those are drugs that block that effect of angiotensin.
Wow. That is about the most comprehensive rundown I've heard. You know, I knew a lot of it, but you added some additional nuance to my understanding of how cardiovascular disease develops. So I hope people listen and take notes. And there's more, as they say in the infomercials, because we're going to roll out in part two. The nice thing about the company that makes Kyolic aged garlic extract, Wakanaga, a big company in Japan, is that they're well-financed and they have the wherewithal to undertake really high-quality scientific research to validate the efficacy of aged garlic extract, and it just keeps on rolling. So we're going to talk about some of the new research studies that show its benefits, and yet another aspect of cardiovascular disease risk can be helped via the use of Kyolic aged garlic extract. You can find out more information at kyolic.com. They've got an 800 number, 800-421-2998, if you need information about what formula might be the optimal formula for you, because they make a variety of formulas. call 800-421-2998. Also, Kyolic aged garlic extract formulas are available at local natural health retailers nationwide and online, and even on Fullscript, which is my online dispensary. Stand by, Jim, because we're going to talk about some of these new studies when we return. Our listeners know we divide our podcast into two parts. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.